Good evening, Vancouver. Welcome back to Canucks After Dark, May 13th. May 13th, and we are still talking about the Vancouver Canucks, who are still alive and are in the lead in round number two of the Stanley Cup playoffs. As always, joined by my co-host, Canuck Clay. How are you feeling?
I feel as good as I look, so I'll leave it to the viewers to decide. No, of course, I feel great. I look great. You look great. I sound like a broken record, but the fact that we keep talking about the Canucks as we go deeper and deeper into the spring, I'm in a good mood. And I know we were both there at the watch party. I know we're going to recap all these games, but really proud of this team, despite our guys getting suspended and all.
they're putting up a heck of an effort.
Yeah.
The fact that the Canucks have not yet trailed in this playoffs is...
I never even thought about that.
Yeah, I just thought of it now. Because wow. They won game one against Nashville, and they won in six, and then they won game one here. And yeah, the Canucks have been in the driver's seat their entire way through the postseason so far. And this team, after a stressful 4-3 win last night, thanks to a couple goals from Lindholm, a couple goals from Besser, and a big 42 save night from Artur Shelov's. Yeah. The Canucks are back in the driver's seat with a chance to take an absolute stranglehold on the series tomorrow.
Do you think it's going to go the same way as the Nashville one, where we basically win all the games away? So if it follows suit, we're supposed to win tomorrow night, right?
I'll take it. I mean, this team seems to have some sort of road magic in them. 4-0 now on the road. Obviously, the three wins in Nashville on the road in 3, 4, and 6, and then the one win here in game three. What I've been really impressed by is the difference in style, right? I mean, those Nashville games were all like, oh, the Canucks had 18 shots and still found a way to win just by shutting the door defensively. But now they're in 5-4, 4-3, and 4-3, you know, scoring focused games.
Yeah.
It helps that Stuart Skinner has been on the other end and has been pretty poor, where the Canucks have had the better goaltender, but it's a different style of play and the Canucks are, you know, living up to that challenge.
Yeah. Do you think, so regardless of result, I know it's hard to separate result because both of us are so invested in it, but would you agree that these games, not because recency bias either, are these games more entertaining to you? Do you find these Oilers Canucks games more entertaining than they're completely different? I agree. They're like, instead of 2-1s, yeah, we're getting 5-4s and 4-3s.
The Predators games had some novelty to them. Like, yeah, oh, this is the first time we're back in the playoffs in a long period of time. And that had some excitement. Also, I mean, how many games were the Canucks up by one goal and just had to hang on to that lead? Like, that was entertaining in a different way, right? It got the heart rate up. It was stressful. And it was that playoff stress that for me, it was like, I haven't felt this in a while and it's fun when it goes your way.
Yeah.
I think back to game four, of the first round when, obviously the Canucks were down 4-1 and came back in that game. That one was like, not fun until the end. This on the other hand is much more, it's not even that much more open, but both of these teams are capitalizing on chances when they get them. That Edmonton power play is ruthless.
Yes,
but the Canucks are matching it at 5-on-5.
Great point. Not only gameplay, Parker, but I think you'd agree there are more personalities on our opponent this time. Like, of course, you got McDavid and Draisaitl, but Evander Kane, we love to hate him. So apparently just his ex-wife, if you know what I'm talking about, the goalie, Stuart Skinner, he's a character as well. So there just seems to be more personalities. Nashville, they're a good team, but there's no one that you really either hate it or... In fact, I was saying throughout the Nashville series, I was like, I actually like these guys. I actually like their coach. Like, Knobloch is fine too. I just find there's more personalities, and I maybe it's a divisional thing too. We know them a bit better, but I just want to win more. And it's the second round. So all these things I think are factors. I didn't say anything that was brilliant or rocket science there, but yeah, we're getting deeper in the playoffs. We know if we win this series, we're in the final four, which is pretty sick. So of course we're very, we're invested in that. I'm on the edge of my seat with every single call, cross check, end goal.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, looking back at last night, and we'll take a little bit of time to go through the first three games because we haven't convened since the start of this series. We previewed it right before game one, which obviously was on Wednesday. And then, no rest in this series, which is good without the travel, right? Just every other night, you know, you can spend the following day after a game decompressing, you know, looking back on the game, whether it was a win or a loss. And then the next day it is all right, preview, like let's focus on what's going to happen tonight. And then you're right in that game.
Love it.
You haven't had to dwell on anything. And I think that's big for both teams, right? You look at that overtime loss in game two, the Canucks had, and that was a bit of a heartbreaker, right? There's no time to dwell on that though. It's like, all right, get on the plane to Edmonton. Let's go. Yeah. We got to win game three, which the Canucks did. So
yeah. Imagine an extra day, Parker, of stewing over this suspension and stuff.
I think it's beneficial all around, I think. Yeah. So, we'll take some time tonight. We'll talk about the three games. I mean, obviously recency bias is going to be big for us. We'll talk mostly about game three, I think, cause that's the one that everyone just lived. Everyone's up to date on, and talk about game four upcoming, of course. With the likely return, I guess, of Noah Juulsen, which will be an interesting talking point.
Yeah.
The Canucks have the lead in this series. No one's really, and I mean, you know, the Athletics odds are now 50-50 for this series. Ooh. With the Canucks up 2-1. They were 75-25, basically, 74-26, I think. I think betting odds are right around 50-50 also. And frankly, I think that's fair, right? I think a lot of models aren't, you know, sure on Artur Shelov's, which I think is reasonable. I think the real question going into game four is going to be, can they keep playing Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl for 29-30 minutes a night?
Yeah, great point. And then I'm not sure we're going to get to this. So I'll just hit now. You know, Parker, I say this every show, but I talk about how much I love watching the post games and the interviews from the other team. McDavid, like he doesn't have the best personality in the world, but today, I give him credit. He refused to be mad at Susie Zadorov. He actually said, this is fun. I like this. This is playoff hockey. They got a big, big, strong defenseman. So he didn't, maybe he knew that also, that he didn't want to say anything to jeopardize the suspension. But I was actually impressed with the way McDavid handled himself. He even chuckled a couple times. They talked, and I bring that up because you mentioned the 29-30 minutes. And he basically chuckled and said, are you asking me if I'm tired, if I can sustain it? And he goes, and then he kind of just chuckled. He says, I feel fine, but whatever. It's only game three. Yeah. By the way, before we get going, I do want to recognize Jaskrin. Thank you for flexing your membership for 6 months. We appreciate you. And I love Helen's question. And I'll start us off because, and if you want to tell people why are you wearing orange for a moment, I thought you're an Oilers fan. Well, I will say, Helen, Parker and I just noticed we rarely wear Canucks stuff on the show for whatever reason, whether we're coming from something like softball for Parker, or I want to show that I'm a bowler, even though I'm not, or I don't know. I just noticed that we actually very rarely wear Canucks stuff on the show.
Yeah. I think I don't know. It feels biased almost. I know like we're Canucks fans, we're biased, et cetera, but yeah. I don't want to wear like a jersey during, I don't know. It's weird. I'm wearing orange because I went to softball and this was the lightest shirt that I could find. And it was pretty nice outside today.
Yeah.
And I got home at 10:58. And I said, I don't have time to change. And that's why I got this dent in my head from my hat that I was wearing. And I just, you know, threw some stuff in the hair and showed up. So I was going to wear a sweater over it, but it's 24 degrees in this room. So that's not going to happen.
And I have a dent in my head just because I'm old and I'm losing hair. But that's a different thing.
Yeah. That is different, unfortunately. So let's go back. Let's go back in time. Let's go back to game one. And we'll quickly touch on that. We'll quickly touch on game two and game three. Yeah. So game one, Canucks win 5-4. This was it's funny looking back on these because I frankly don't remember much. Right.
Me neither.
Going that far back. Edmonton gets an early power play from a too many men penalty. This was the start of the Ian Cole nightmare experience.
That's right.
Where he jumps over the boards when he's not supposed to, takes a penalty, and he is also on the ice for the penalty kill, lets Zach Hyman sneak behind him, and Edmonton scores on that dangerous power play 2 minutes into that game. And that was the whole narrative going into this series. It was, if the Canucks can stay out of the box, they'll have a chance. Luckily, that was the only penalty they took that night, 100% on the power play for the Edmonton Oilers, going 1-for-1. Ekholm does get another one with about 5 minutes to go in the first period. And this is just a point shot that gets through.
Cole put it behind his own net off the boards.
Right. Yeah. The bad breakout where he gets, he has the puck with time in his own slot and immediately fires it wide of his own net. And it goes right to the Oilers, right to Draisaitl. And not the guy you want to pass to in those situations. Canucks get a big one quick to start the second period. This is Dakota Joshua just being smart. I mean, Ian Cole, smart shot, misses maybe intentionally. We'll go with. Fires it wide on the short side. Puck comes to Joshua. Skinner can't get there in time. Sharp angle for a left-handed shot. Really tough finish for Joshua, but he goes upstairs right under the bar. And the Canucks make it 2-1 and sort of hang on with that lead just down by one for a good chunk of the period. But when you get scored on by Cody Ceci, probably not a great sign. And this is just a nice little button hook by Corey Perry. Drops it for Ceci. Or sorry, it was Derek Ryan. Drops it for Ceci, who drives it through.
Through Cole's wheels, off of Cole's legs, by the way.
Off of Cole's legs. And the wheels really come off where 45 seconds later, the Oilers score again when the Canucks aren't ready. And this is Tyler Myers just being pretty lax defensively. It's a 1-on-4, frankly. You can be a little aggressive on that guy. He lets Hyman walk in. Shot goes a little bit off of Myers' stick and goes in. So the Canucks are down 4-1, and it feels pretty bleak.
Pretty bleak. And by the way, I know this is the Ian Cole show. You're telling me that in the first three goals of the game, two of them were because of Ian Cole masterfully putting a puck off the end boards, one behind his own net and one behind their net.
Yeah, it was weird. He made four mistakes that led to three Oilers goals, which is tough.
Yeah.
But, I mean, frankly, at this point in the game, what were you thinking when the Oilers made it 4-1? Where was your head at?
So for this game, honestly, my head wasn't anywhere because this was Wednesday night and we had a big confirmation in Catholic Church, a big thing. So I was actually helping run the reception. And it wasn't until the third period where I realized that, Parker, this is the earliest we've ever cleaned up off this thing. Where is everyone going? And I knew it was because everyone was rushing home to watch the third period. So I wasn't thinking much, actually, aside from, oh, dang, this is not good. And I don't know what these goals are like. So I don't know if she loves playing really bad or if they're not his fault.
So he wasn't playing great, frankly. Yeah. Like, he wasn't making any big saves. And it's 4-1. And at this time, I was a bit conflicted because I was like, man, we're not getting any bounces. The Oilers are up 4-1. This team's come back from that before, but it doesn't feel like tonight's the night. Like, bounce back, come back Tuesday or come back Thursday or Friday. Yeah. Would have been Friday. And see what we can do. However, on the other hand, the Oilers, like, once Elias Lindholm scores that goal with 3 minutes to go in the second period, gets it back within two, and it's an ugly goal, right? Gets the puck behind the net, tries to play it out in front for Joshua. Skinner puts it in his own net off of his own stick. So it's a two-goal game going into the third. And the Canucks have been playing, like, the last half of the second period, the Canucks had the Oilers on the ropes after that Zach Hyman goal. So it sort of felt like, hey, if they can keep the pressure on, keep it up, you know, there's a chance here.
Yep.
And they do basically exactly what they did against Nashville that one game. They say, hey, we're just going to keep playing our game. We're not going to get sucked in. We're not going to sell out. We get a 4-on-4 opportunity. Pretty bad breakout from Edmonton. And this is a beautiful little three-way passing play between Besser, Miller, and Ceci. Besser and Miller work to hold the line. Goes over to Ceci, plays to Miller on the far wall. And it's sort of just a 2-on-2. Besser runs out of space. He can't drop it back to Miller because there's a man there. So he just fires it into the far corner where he knows only Ceci can get it. Takes a perfect bounce. Ceci picks it up. Miller goes to the back post. And Brock Besser has done such a good job all playoff of making a pass and getting lost. He is so good at just letting everyone drift towards the puck and just staying where he's been the whole time. So he stays at the top of the circle. And by the time Ceci fires it over there, every single Oilers player is on this side of the faceoff circle. Essentially, there is no one. Brock Besser, who had a guy on him 3 seconds ago when he made that pass, now has about 20 feet of space. And he just plays it down to Miller, who makes an obscene tip from the goal line, past Skinner. Like that is Sidney Crosby-esque. That is disgusting.
Yeah, and that's what, you know, I don't follow Crosby close enough, Parker, but does Crosby score a bunch of those goals, or are they saying it takes Crosby like skill?
He's scored a few of those.
Wow.
In his career, for sure.
Wow. I don't think my body even turns that way. That was it was pretty impressive. By the way, were you, I presume you were watching this thing, were you fine, surprised when it was Shelov's in net for the start of the third?
That was an interesting conversation. So Kelly Rudy comes on the broadcast at the second intermission, and he says, I would put DeSmith in.
Okay.
And I honestly was feeling pretty pessimistic.
Yeah.
And all respect to Rick Tocchet, who I guess wasn't, and said, nope, Shelov's is still our guy.
Right.
Because I was looking at it as, you know, the Canucks are probably going to lose this game because the Oilers probably score again at some point. And five goals is going to be hard to overcome. Mm-hmm. Why don't we see how DeSmith looks for game two?
Right.
That was sort of my opinion. Very happy to be wrong in this case, because obviously the Canucks start piling them up. And how about Nikita Zadorov? Just when the team needs it most, you know, Bluger enters the line, just plays it back to Zadorov on a rush that looked like might be a 2-on-1, but a smart play to not go for Hronek on the back door because that pass would have been broken up. Plays it back to Zadorov, drives it through everybody. What an addition Zadorov's been, but that ties the game at 4-4. And then just 39 seconds later, Connor Garland with one of the ugliest first or second round game winning goals. Great play by Zadorov to fire this up to Joshua. Plays it perfectly, holds the defense. Joshua or Garland's in motion, so he's able to burn to the outside, fakes the slap shot, and Skinner bites. Skinner should not be biting there. He goes down to one leg, has to push off with the right, which opens the five hole, and Garland just throws it there. It's going wide, but Skinner, trying to get to his left, sort of kicks it back into his own net. The crowd goes crazy on this one, louder than in game one, that Joshua goal that I remember, that pop in the crowd, game one against Nashville. This one was even louder. What an unreal comeback down 4-1 for the Canucks to win this 1-5-4.
Jaskrin mentioned this. I was going to say this even without his prompting, but we need to talk about Skinner's game one comments too. So Parker, I was watching, by the time I got home, right, from, I was able to watch the highlights before I did my late night show, and I saw Stuart Skinner. They played his interview on Sportsnet, and I even tweeted. So I really liked him, not even liked, past tense. Well, I like the fact that we're scoring on him, but I also, he had such a good attitude, and I know this was the first game in the series, but he was matter of fact. He was actually joking. He says, reporter says, Leon Draisaitl says he'd much rather win in, what did he say? Be in an 8-1 game, lose an 8-1 game than lose a 5-4 game. And Stuart Skinner's like, I don't want to lose an 8-1 game.
It's a bad luck. This was a really interesting narrative coming in, and I think Jason Brough sort of led this narrative of planting the seeds of doubt. Right? How do you get in the Oilers' heads in game one? And I don't think there's any better way to do it. Right?
Right.
You go down four. Like, a 6-1 win would have been awesome. But it would have. But for Edmonton, the narrative there is, hey, we laid an egg. We're not going to do that again. Right? Mm-hmm. But this sort of win, going down 4-1 and saying, yeah, we can hang. We can come back. We can fight that back. That is the seed of doubt for the whole series. No lead is safe anymore, right? The Oilers have a 3-1 lead going into the third period of game four.
Yep.
Do they feel safe? Absolutely not after how game one went. So that is really the best case scenario for how that first game could have gone.
I was trying to think of what else. You're right. This was less than a week ago. It's not like we're too old, but because these games are rapid fire and they don't look the same exactly, but it's all the same characters. It is kind of hard, right? Without watching the highlights, it's kind of hard to distinguish these actually.
Yeah. That's why I watch the highlights as we go.
Oh, you're no wonder you have such great detail. I just remember like big goofy things, but yeah, I do remember being in a really good mood and I just loved it. And of course, I'm sure I think we joked about this last week. I'm sure you're keeping abreast of all the X talk, the back and forth between these two amazingly classy sets of fans.
It's a good rivalry for sure. Yeah, lots of back and forth. Game two, we don't need to spend too much time on because the Canucks lost, and that's less fun.
We don't like losses.
And this is one of those ones. This loss hurt for me because you have a lot of good narratives go the Canucks' way. You have Elias Pettersson scoring that goal on the power play where you remember he had the same shot against Nashville and he missed the net, right? This one makes no mistake. Quick snap, fires it through. Canucks have a 1-0 lead on the power play. Drysdale does get that one back, sort of banks it in off. Or no, this was a different one. That was just the one where he got loose in front.
Yeah.
You get the Besser tip on the Soucy shot. Beautiful tip. Skinner's going high. Puck goes low. But Ekholm ties it right away. And then when this game is tight and there's not a lot of room out there, Nikita Zadorov just comes through and he scores the same goal he scored on Juuse Saros, skates all the way down the wing and just fires a wrist shot somehow over the shoulder. And that was one of those goals that felt like that was one of those ones like, oh, we're going to look back on that one.
Yeah.
At the time it was like, that's going to be one of those moments that were like, that's where they took the 2-0 lead in the series. That's the, you know, the big one obviously didn't work that way, but man, Zadorov has been a monster.
I see people saying lowball Hronek, whatever. And then because Hronek's an RFA, like it's not like we're going to, there's no way we're going to lose a Hronek for nothing. In fact, we could do absolutely nothing and it'll take a 1-year deal. And then we worry about flipping him next year. But the narrative is spend money on Zadorov right now.
He's been unreal. He has been a fantastic addition. What the problem was, though, the Canucks went into, you know, back foot mode. Oilers go 15-2 in the third period on shots. Absolutely dominate the third period. Hughes takes a stick to the face from McDavid that doesn't get called. McDavid scores right after that to tie it at 3. And then in overtime, of course, we get the Evan Bouchard goal that goes off of Ian Cole and right into the net for the fourth. And that was sort of my tweet. I was like, Ian Cole has been directly responsible for 4 of Edmonton's 8 goals.
Well, that's a good percentage.
It's a really high percentage. It's a remarkably high percentage. So that was a problem, but the Oilers won that one in overtime. On the bright side, got to go out and see the Aurora that night, which was like the one saving grace after that game. But yeah, that one hurt in game 2.
Yeah, and I think to be fair, that McDavid goal was just sick. How Parker, you see how fast he came in, and yet his hands are going. It's not like he's just skating fast.
It honestly frustrates me because I look at that, and I've said this forever. Like, why doesn't he score more?
Yeah,
because if you can just go do that at will, why don't you do that 6 times a game? he's ridiculous. And shout out to Carson Soucy who stayed with him on one of those plays in that game. Breaking up a breakaway, but man, it was tough to watch.
Oh, and then and I watched the game winning goal, the overtime goal, and Blueger did everything right. He rushed Bouchard at the point, and Bouchard didn't have a clear shot at the net, Parker. So that's why I don't think he's smart enough to say, oh, that's Ian Cole standing there. I'm gonna put it off him, but he certainly put it off of those two players that were on Shelov's left. And yeah, Shelov, he can't make the save because his glove hits Cole. So it double whammy, right? It hits Cole. Shelov goes to save it. And now the puck's going like this as Shelov's trying to save. It was very frustrating. Oh no, that was yesterday. This one was the one off the, this was the one off a stick. Yeah. That was even worse where Shelov didn't have a chance. Yeah. Yeah. That was really bad.
Sorry. All right, let's just get to game 3. Cause that's the one that everyone cares about. That's the one that happened last night. And that was a big win. Obviously, both of us, both at the viewing party at Rogers Arena last night, it was bumping in there. Mm-hmm. Tough start. Brock Besser gets a tripping penalty on Draisaitl. And the Canucks, honestly, I thought did a pretty good job killing this penalty. Yeah. The problem is, and I don't know if you noticed this, but like the Canucks will do something good to kill a penalty. They'll clear it twice. Like they'll be playing good. And then you look up like, oh, there's still 58 seconds left in this power play.
I know.
And PP2 is not coming over the boards for the Oilers. They have I don't think we've seen PP2 yet for Edmonton this whole series. And they eventually get one. This is a weird bounce. It goes off of Tyler Myers' stick. It goes right to Matthias Ekholm, who's tracking the rebound. No chance for Shelov's. So they make it 1-0. But the Canucks get a power play right after. Pretty weak call on Leon Draisaitl. But the entire Edmonton media said that we weren't allowed to complain about officiating the game before. So obviously they couldn't complain about officiating this one, right? We definitely didn't see anything on Twitter about that. But how about Elias Lindholm? I mean, Brock Besser with a nice shot from the point, fakes a slap shot, plays it over to Hughes. Hughes goes back to him. Wrister looks like it gets through clean. We sort of all thought it was Lindholm at the time, but they announced it at Besser. They kept it at Besser for the whole first period. So we thought, it must have been Besser. Ends up being Lindholm's goal. But the Canucks tie it at 1. 4.5 minutes later, the Brock Besser, JT Miller, Carson Soucy line is just continuing to work. Miller comes in down the left wing, fires it all the way around to the far point, goes back down low to Miller. And again, Brock Besser comes up the right wall and just stops at the top of the faceoff circle. Brock Besser's biggest weapon is not skating. He just finds his way into open space, gets that pass from Miller. He's able to walk in. He's got no one in front of him except for the two guys battling in front of the net. Stuart Skinner. That's a much different player.
Same skill and goal. Yeah.
Stuart Skinner gives him the entire blocker side of the net here. And Besser makes no mistake, hits his spots, doesn't hit the post like one Edmonton player does, and blames goaltending for some reason. Besser fires that far side, gets what we thought at the time was his second of the period.
Yeah.
And then again, another forecheck late in the first period. A terrible giveaway from Warren Fogel. I mean, yeah, we have the, you know, you have the puck in your own zone, glassing out. It just tries to pass it to the middle where only Pew Suter is.
There was no one in front of him, Parker. He could have skated out. I don't know what he's doing.
He absolutely could have. And look at what Brock Besser does the second that pass gets off the stick. He stops skating. And he sneaks behind the defense. And by the time the puck gets to him, he's got 8 feet between him and the next Oilers guy and 8 feet between him and the net. And again, picks his spot. Far glove, low, just over the pad, just under the glove. Skinner flares the glove just as that shot comes out, giving a lane for the puck to come through. And at the time, we think that is a Brock Besser natural hat trick in the first period.
Yes, even a couple Edmonton Canucks faithful in Edmonton threw their hat on the ice. What was interesting, Parker, just going back to his first goal, the Lindholm goal, which was credited Besser. Wasn't it interesting there on Canucks Twitter? They were the only ones who said it was Lindholm with the goal. They said it right away. But you're right. Al Murdoch inside of Rogers Arena at the viewing party said Brock Besser. The NHL app said Brock Besser. So then as he piles on goal number 2, supposedly, and goal number 3, supposedly, everyone thinks that it was a natural hat trick and that the Canucks were the only ones to get it wrong on Twitter. And everyone else was correct. And then sure enough, by the end of that first intermission, they had officially reversed it. And then people were even complaining, they're taking away. No. They check the goal. They check every goal because there's bonuses riding on these things. There's everything. There's contracts. So they got to get the stats right.
Yeah, and this one was tough. So for me, I ran to the washroom at the last commercial break of the first period, which I think was about like 2.5 minutes to go in the first. It was pretty late last commercial break. So I figured, okay, I'm going to run to the washroom, and I know we're sort of the secret washroom on the suite level. So I run down to there, and I get back right as the faceoff's happening. So I figured, okay, I'm not going to run in and try to run to my seat. I'll watch on the TV there, next to my section stairs. And Brock Besser scores. And I sprint up the stairs and I throw my hat as far as I can.
Well, you did.
Like, yeah. And I literally said it before the game. I brought a hat that I didn't like very much. I'm like, just in case I need to throw it. And I throw it and it's flying. And then it just gets a bit of an angle and tail spins down to the lower bowl. But someone in the lower bowl finished the job for me. I saw my hat end up on the ice. So I was very happy.
How many hats?
It didn't matter for anything.
Okay, so this is embarrassing. You were lining up to go to the washroom or going to the washroom, which was smart. I was sitting because we were in one of the premium lounges so I was waiting for sushi. But actually, the Canucks scored twice when I was waiting for sushi. So my people that were with me, including my wife, Gail, were saying, just stay out there the whole game.
I'm the real man of the people. I had my triple O's. I had my $7 Budweiser.
You're good. So how many hats we're on the Rogers Arena ice, not the Rogers Place ice.
I would say probably 30 to 40.
Okay, okay.
It's like a significant number, and they didn't have like the ice crew to sweep them up, so they just had one guy out there just like picking up hats and like stuffing them in his arms, which was great.
That's awesome. That's awesome. That's awesome.
Before we go to the second period, shout out to Jason Tosca, new member for us, name that I don't recognize. So welcome if you are new here. Thank you for joining.
Yeah, he hangs around on my show. That sounded the wrong way. He's an awesome viewer of the show. So Jason, thank you for coming over here. And yes, now you get not only me, but you get someone who's smart. So this is really good. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much. So first period goes the Canucks away. Shots are pretty even. Canucks obviously up 3-1. And what do? Close the door. They say, hey, we are going to do what we did against Nashville. Easier, probably, against Nashville to pull off, to just get yourself on the back foot. Hronek gets a holding penalty on Corey Perry. Draisaitl comes out, of course, as Draisaitl. And this is just a shot from a really, you know, his spot, frankly. Shelov's just a little bit late to get there, goes off of his torso and in. So they are within one.
Great shot.
Pretty, you know, battling throughout the second period. Canucks are again on the back foot most of the way, but they do get a power play opportunity. Thank you, Darnell Nurse, for cross-checking. Darnell Nurse, I hope you're in the lineup every game.
he's so bad, man.
Dude, him he's and so CeCe. There was one play where I think Nurse hit somebody and it was kind of borderline. I was saying to my buddy sitting next to me, like, man, if Nurse or CeCe gets suspended, we're in trouble. Like that pairing, pairing has been really bad for the Oilers. And how about the Canucks, you know, sort of matching the power play here. This is a unreal goal from Elias Lindholm. You know, play from the point goes right under, jams under his skate blade, which most guys, myself included, are going to do one of these like Charlie Brown trying to kick a football and the foot's going to go out and you're going to be on your back and look silly. But instead he channels his inner beautiful game, kicks it up to the backhand and finds a way through Skinner. I mean, what's Skinner supposed to do there? Like that's a sweet play. Cause you don't know what he's going to do with it. And the Canucks have their 2-goal lead right back.
Yeah, I know Parker. I did not give that goal enough justice. I think it wasn't until after I watched it closely where I realized what he did, that he was basically, it's that funny thing where the skate blade like kind of hooks onto the puck and just kind of drags it. And most people fall on their butt, but yeah, it's such a skilled play through traffic. Granted, no one nailed him, like no one like cross-checked him or anything, but that was still a really nice goal. And I think you sort of hinted at something I was going to ask you about. And I think the narrative here is that technically, can you blame Skinner? As much as I love seeing a score, can you blame Skinner on any of the 4 goals, especially the 2 Besser ones? Those were snipes far side, like one from this side, one from this side on him. Lindholm is a tip. So yeah, Besser, what do you?
Besser picked his spots on the 2-1 and 3-1 goals, but also you got to get a save at some point. And it's one thing if it was one game that you're allowing 4 goals, but it's every game essentially, right? Like you got to get a save at some point when you're facing 18 shots a night.
Yeah,
you got to find a way.
Okay, that's fair. I hear you.
So we go to the third period. By the way, we missed, or right at the end of the second period, we get right after the Canucks goal, essentially, Nikita Zadorov just demolishes Evander Kane into the Oilers bench. It's perfect. It's the perfect protagonist. It's the perfect antagonist, being Zadorov and Kane. It's a perfect hit. Evander Kane chicken wings the stick, and Zadorov's trying to get it back and sort of ends up in a scuffle there. So they call Zadorov for roughing, and then they cut to Evander Kane. And in the rink, they cut to Evander Kane with that smirk on his face, knowing that what he just did gave his team a power play. And he's thinking, yeah, we're scoring on this. You're going to look dumb. You can hit me all you want. And then it pops up on the Sportsnet broadcast where it said Oilers power play 2 minutes. That folds back up.
Yes.
4-on-4, 2 minutes folds out. And everyone in my section is like standing up and like laughing. And then Kane's face cuts as they realize Corey Perry is skating to the penalty box. to serve the bench minor. Because I think someone, I think it was Fogel or someone was like, you know, took a shot at Zadorov on the bench. So that goes 4-on-4. But I mean, Zadorov, again, I keep saying it, but what a X factor he's been.
Yeah, I agree with everything he said about Zadorov. Give him the money. And kudos to the Sportsnet production team who, I saw that exact same thing, Parker. It was so funny. It was like they knew it was going to happen. You actually see Kane's face go from the smile to the glare. It was so good. By the way, were you there from the very start last night? Like anthems and Hulk? Okay.
Yeah.
Don't you think it was hilarious when as soon as they put the feed on after the first shot was Chris Knobloch, boo, then Rick Tocchet, yay, then McDavid, boo, then JT Miller, yay. It was almost juvenile, but I loved it.
It's so funny. It is super childish, but there's something that's like, hey, we're all on the same team in that rink. It's great. And they did that a few times throughout the game. It was great.
Yes, they did. Nothing else.
So Canucks get into penalty trouble in the third period. Zadorov gets called for a trip on Connor McDavid. Canucks kill it off.
Yep.
Ian Cole gets called for a cross check with 8.5 minutes to go. The Canucks kill it off. Yeah. Shots in the third period end up being 22-3.
Great.
If you told me the Canucks would go into the third period with a 2-goal lead and they'd get outshot 22-3 by the Oilers and give up 2 power plays, I would think, sounds like overtime at the least, right? Like that team is scoring and they're going to score in bunches.
Yeah.
But the Canucks, I mean, if you look at the heat map, the Canucks kept pretty much everything outside. Not a lot of high danger. Yes. The high danger Archer Shelov stayed with. He was unbelievable. Bouchard scores the 1 goal with 1:16 to go off of
Ian Cole. That's the one I was trying to explain about 15 minutes ago. Yes.
Yeah. Just hits him in the torso and somehow gets through. I mean, how can you be so cursed? Like that one's not his fault. He's boxing out his man. Yeah. Goes off him, goes in. And then the Canucks just hang on for 1:16, somehow survive. Connor McDavid gets buckled at the buzzer.
Did you see it happen? Like live, sorry, not live. We're watching the same TV. Did you notice? I was too busy filming and cheering. I actually didn't see it happen. Like
I was really much more focused on the celebration. They did show the clip after, before we left.
Okay.
And our instinct was to laugh because frankly it was like yeah, I mean, he shouldn't be there after the buzzer, and he gave a hack and he got run over. And I'm looking at that as like, hey, you know, it's playoff hockey, you know, don't be right next to the net after the buzzer goes. And obviously I'm biased, right? If that had been Pettersson, I would have been frustrated.
Me too.
I thought McDavid handled it pretty well in his scrum today. He said, hey, it's playoff hockey, it's the way it should be.
Great. Yeah.
But that gets us to, you know, our biggest story essentially going into game 4, Carson Soucy.
Hey, out. Parker, just before we get that, sorry, I'm so sorry to interrupt, but I want to tie a bow on game 3. You mentioned the high danger chances. Despite everything, it was 2-1 in the third period, which is absolutely crazy.
That's so impressive.
Yeah. But I was going to ask you, I know score effects. I know where the Canucks feel very comfortable just buckling down and, yeah, as you said, keeping everyone to the outside and letting Shelov see everything, because he's going to save it. He's so confident right now. But didn't you wish in a perfect world we got kind of more heat on Pickard in net just to make him nervous or try like anything?
I almost think the fact that the Canucks won, I look back on it and I think it's kind of good, because now it's like if the Canucks had like 11 shots in the third period and Pickard stopped them all, it's like, all right, we're getting Pickard in the next game, right? And he might be better than Skinner. But now it's like, hey, he faced 3 shots and none of them were dangerous, right?
What a great way of putting it.
The Canucks had one high danger chance in the third period.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there wasn't really any risk there.
Okay.
So that might, you know, I may be reaching a little bit, but that might be helpful.
Love it. Sorry, you were saying about Soucy, the big story today.
Yeah, and I think I also want to mention, it's a great point that you made, right? Like in the third period, technically, high danger chances were 8-1. For the Oilers.
Right.
But at 5-on-5, it was 2-1, right? Like there was a few at 4-on-4 and a few at 5-on-4, or maybe the 6-on-5 gets included in there. But either way, you look at this heat map of where the Oilers were shooting from, so much of it was from the point.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know if this is something I can show. I wonder if I can.
Yeah. Just, try it.
I will try it. Present screen, share screen. window, this window, share.
Beauty. It's
kind of small. There we go. So you look at this heat map from last night. Look at where all the Canucks chances are, right? It's everything. I mean, there weren't a lot, frankly, right? 18 shots to 45. Where they were shooting from, you know, in high danger areas. A couple from the point, but mostly in tight. Look at the Oilers. It's a lot from, you know, the blocker side faceoff dot. But look at all the stuff up here, right? Yeah. Look at all the stuff up at the point. So from a you know, expected goals perspective, especially at 5-on-5, you know, 61% to 39% is not egregious for the Canucks. High danger chances, 8-6. Sure, you look at the Corsi, 59-26. Whoa, the Oilers must have dominated. But so much from the outside, the Canucks really did a good job of protecting the guts of the ice.
Love it. Love it. And they feel comfortable doing so. And I know I saw a couple people in the chat, and rightfully so, what do we have to do to get more than 15, 18 shots in net? And even I think Evander Kane said in his media today, he says, this team, like, you notice how they never say, no one ever says the Canucks or the Oilers. They just say that team, they're a good team, that team. But Evander Kane basically, that team has made a habit of winning playoff games, but with only 15 shots on net. It's almost like a badge of honor now.
It's the structure. Like, you compare this to the Bruce Boudreaux team, where it was like more like this Oilers team is, right? Like high flying. You're going to allow a bunch up the middle, but you're going to get some chances yourself. This Canucks team has sort of realized, like, hey, we can score a few goals on Stuart Skinner and sit back. And even with this super dangerous Oilers team, if you have a 2-goal lead going to the third and you buckle down and keep everything outside and you have a decent goalie in net, you got a pretty good chance to win. And that seems to be the route they're taking, no matter how stressful that is for us. And maybe it's not a very enjoyable third period viewing experience where everything's in the D zone. It is just stress, but it's working.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Talk about the Seuss man.
All right. Carson Soucy is out for game 4. Obviously gets in a bit of a scrum with McDavid at the end of the game. Gives him a bit of a, you know, a cross-checky shove to the chest. Yeah. McDavid gives a little two-handed whack back. All's fine at that point. Yeah. Soucy goes for one more cross-check to the chest. And as he does that, Nikita Zadorov comes in and gives him the cross check right to the lower back. McDavid does one of these, as you would with Nikita Zadorov cross checking you in the back, which now Susie's cross check, which is at the chest, is now right where Connor McDavid's head has fallen. So he gets a bit of a double whammy there. Which I look at and I'm cheering for because, you know, hey, you know, it's playoffs. It's going to be physical. You're gonna take some hits. And again, McDavid even said the same thing. At the time you see this come through, do you think there's a suspension coming?
My first reaction was no, Parker. And I admit it was half Canucks bias, obviously. And it was half, oh, so much stuff happens after the game. As long as no one gets hurt, let's just move on to game 4. And it's going to be a total intense matchup. Awesome. Awesome. Great for the game. And that's the way I went to bed, is feeling that, no, I think they're going to chalk it up too. And I didn't even know about this Hyman cross check on Zadorov, which I know we'll get to too. So I was just looking at the Soucy one, and yeah. And I wasn't worried about those two slashes, as you know, as you said so well. After Soucy initially pushed McDavid gives a slash, and then Soucy gives a quick slash back before the cross check. And obviously those weren't suspended nor fined today. So that's part of the game.
And nor then should they be.
What's that? Yeah, exactly. Nor should exactly.
They be. Like it's, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So then I wake up, and then maybe, I don't like to, who cares? I'm not at the same level as Craig Button and Frank Cervelli, whatever. But I do read their stuff, like a lot of insiders. And to a man, everyone outside of Vancouver was saying, no, this has got to be suspended. Then Thomas Drantz does a really nice thing on Twitter showing all of the cross checks that have been suspendable in the playoffs.
3 years, I think. Not just playoffs, but it was just from the last three years, there was 8 instances of cross checks being suspended.
Perfect. Half and of them put them for all one game, together. Right? Yeah. Half of them for one game suspensions, and a couple more. But he also made the point that saying none of them were after the whistle and in that. So this is kind of uncharted territory. So finally, all to say, Parker, I was thinking, okay, maybe it's going to be a game, but hopefully not more than that. And sure enough, that's what it was. So last night, no, I didn't think it was going to be suspendable. This morning, I started to change my tune. How about you?
Yeah, I was sort of in the same boat. I, as someone who feels like, you know, we're sort of always on the short end of the stick as Canucks fans. Cap recapture and Aaron Rome and yada yada yada, right? I'm sort of looking at it as like, yeah, we'll probably get something. But when you look at Sam Bennett not getting anything for that clear sucker punch to Brad Marchand, and I will not defend Brad Marchand at any point.
Yeah.
Except, I mean, he clearly, he's been knocked out for a couple of games because he got sucker punched in the face. Yeah. And they gave Sam Bennett nothing. So I look at that, I'm like, oh, we're just going fast and loose for the playoffs. Like, that's just how it's going to be. And then for this one to rot, like, be the first suspension of the playoffs, like, that felt like, it felt very like, hey, you can't do that to that guy.
Right, right.
Like, Brad Marchand is a superstar in the NHL, but he's not that guy.
Yeah.
And there's
three
guys that maybe get that call, like get that sort of level of, you know, hey, you can't do that to him, right? Sure. But like McDavid's obviously the top of that. But if that had been Corey Perry that gets that cross check up high,
mm-hmm.
I don't think Carson Soucy gets suspended. Because we then see, and you mentioned, you sort of alluded to it, we then see Zach Hyman come in with the stick like this, and guess what? He caught Nikita Zadorov, who wasn't going down, which is a lot harder to do than Connor McDavid. Because Connor McDavid is what, like 6'1", 6'2", maybe?
Sure.
Zadorov's 6'7", 6'8". You got to get up to get that cross check up there. So like that was more intentional. And it actually cut Zadorov. He required stitches, whereas McDavid, there was no injury there. So it really felt like it was like, well, if you're going to call one, you got to call the other. But hey, the other one wasn't on a star player. Yeah. And that's where the frustration sets in for me.
And that's such a good point, Parker, because you look at it. Another way of looking at it, too, is if this was Elias Pettersson or JT Miller or Brock Besser in McDavid's spot, of course, I thought that it would be suspendable. I'd be clamoring for a suspension, probably more than a game. So I get that.
Think it would have been called? Like, do you think they would have given, you know, X player a suspension if it had been?
Well, that's JT my Miller. Point. That's my point. And then, so I would be clamoring for it. And then likely it wouldn't have happened because of exactly what you said. I agree with your point. And then I'd be double mad.
Yeah. Honestly, that's where the first, like, I look at that, I'm like, well, you get it. Like, how does Hyman not even get a fine? for something very similar. Like, it was after the whistle. And I saw someone tweet, it was like, can Carson Soucy appeal this? Because they've set a precedent on the same play that it's not suspendable. Like, could he go to the NHLPA and be like, hey, look at this clip that you decided not to give any supplemental discipline to that was 1.8 seconds after mine and also a cross check to the head. Like, that's where the frustration comes from.
Yeah. I hear you. I'm with you. I hear you. Wow.
So Noah Juulsen will likely get in tomorrow. We have to imagine it'd be him or Friedman, but I think Juulsen's far away. Or hey, Matt Irwin, you never know.
Christian Willanen, he's up here too.
But I think everyone assumes it's going to be Noah Juulsen tomorrow.
And then Parker, does that mean because Cole was a lefty playing on the right side with Zadorov, you flip Cole back and you likely go Hughes, Hronek, Zadorov, Myers, Cole, Juulsen. Would you agree with me?
Yeah, I think you could do that, or you could just sort of slot him.
I like Zadorov playing. Spot. Yeah, I like Zadorov play with Myers. They've done it before when Soucy was out. That's what they did. They went Hughes, Hronek, Zadorov, Myers. I remember Cole Juulsen was always our third pairing. So that's what I would do. Then you technically get Zadorov top 4 minutes now.
Officially. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see because, I mean, you know, Ian Cole was the low minute guy. I remember in game.
Yeah.
Yesterday as well. He had 16 and a half minutes. Yeah. Whereas, you know, Hughes had like Tyler Myers, top minute guy for the Canucks at 22:56. About 7 hits, by the way, for Tyler Myers yesterday with a +1 and an assist. He was great.
I love this from AMD. Juulsen and Cole will cause chaos.
It's a lot of chaos. It is absolutely a lot of chaos. And it's interesting, right? Obviously, we didn't get line rushes today because it was an optional, even though it was a well-attended optional. But we don't know what that means, right? We don't know, you know, how will they line up the defensemen? We know it'll be Hughes, Hronek, but what will they do with the remainder? And what's that going to do for the penalty kill? I think that's a good thing to track as well, because Ian Cole is, you know, he's on PK one.
Right, right. Good point. Oh yeah.
Not that the PK matters, because Edmonton's going to score every time they get the power play anyways, seemingly.
Yeah. Well, okay. So how you feel? I guess we should probably, well, we three playoff games and a suspension. No wonder we took 15 minutes. So let's do 3-4 minutes preview, like tomorrow, predictions, blah, blah, blah. And then we'll do about 5-10 minutes, answer questions. How's that sound?
Sure. And I think the obvious place we have to go is Edmonton's goaltending.
Yeah.
So Chris Knobloch today, you know, said we will see Stuart Skinner again in the series, whether that's game four or game five. So a little bit ominous. Obviously we saw Pickard for 16 minutes of the third period, maybe 17 minutes of the third period. He gets pulled, then they have to put a goalie back in. So they put Stuart Skinner back in to find a little loophole in the rules and get a free timeout, basically.
Yeah. That was because very
Skinner
smart,
gets
actually.
Some warm up time. It is smart, but I also think like it's a little, you know, I feel like the NHL should be like, hey, you can't do that. hey, you can do that, but he's already played tonight, so he doesn't get the sort of warm-up time.
That's true.
So that was interesting, but not that I care that much, frankly, because they won. But yeah, obviously, Stuart Skinner was bad last night, right? He faced 15 shots. He allowed 4 goals. That's frankly unacceptable. And he hasn't been good all series. He has, I think, what was the stat? He has the lowest save percentage by a goalie with at least 20 playoff games since 2005.
That's not good.
That's not good. You expand it to 1980, or it was like maybe 1990, something like that. He's second worst behind Dan Kluche.
Great.
So we know all about that, right? You think back to 2002, 2004, that sort of time, right? That Minnesota series. Where Dan Kluche, you know, frankly wasn't very good. You think back to the Lidstrom shot from center. Yeah. Lots of good memories from my childhood. thank you, Dan. But that's sort of the spot they're in with Stuart Skinner.
Yes. So, and Justin, we'll get to your donation in a second. Thank you. If I'm the Oilers coach, I go with him again. I do. I take him over Calvin Pickard. I really do.
That's the thing. I agree, because it's Calvin Pickard, right? Yeah. Like,
and they're not bringing Jack Campbell up, are they?
He's there. He's there. He's a black ace.
Right.
So Calvin Pickard appeared in 23 games this season, had a 909 with a 245 goals against average. But here's the thing. Like, if you look at when he's played, I mean, he's been an AHL goaltender for years. So he played 23 NHL games this year.
Yeah.
Last year, he played 0.
Ooh.
The year before, he played 3. The year before that, he played 6. The year before that, he played 3. The year before that, he played 6. The year before that, he played 11. The year before that, he played 1.
How old is this guy?
He's 32.
Oh, I didn't know
he
that.
Has not been an, he's been an NHL starter one season in his career.
Yeah.
That was 2016-17 Colorado Avalanche, when they had, 48 points that season. Mm-hmm. He was the starter for that atrocious Avalanche team. Put up a 904 for them. but he hasn't been a starter. He's played 140 career games in 10 seasons.
Right.
So is that, and then your other option, like we said, is Jack Campbell, right?
Yeah.
Which again, he played 5 NHL games this season. And then last season he played 36, had an 888 save percentage. Like he's fallen off the map the last couple of years. He's also 32. They just don't really have any good options. Stuart Skinner was good this season. He was good against LA, but he's got this playoff resume that's just bad. And you got to wonder, like, is he just not a playoff goalie?
I know. This is so crazy. I can't believe we're talking about this. Only from a standpoint of he's the guy who backstopped them when they went on that crazy run, right? This season, like he's good in the regular season. That I guess that's the whole point here. And do you bring in Pickard or Campbell? And they're not, they don't play anything like Shelobs. They're nowhere close to the same age, but have that Shelobs effect. Oh, maybe we can catch lightning in a bottle. But you're, it's not an elimination game. I bring in Skinner because it's not an elimination. If this was 3-1, then I say you pull out all the stops because obviously whatever you're doing isn't working. But, and you can argue that they were the better game in game two, the better team. So Edmonton was full value for that win in game two, fluky as it was. And they dominated portions or controlled portions of game three and one. Yeah, I've convinced myself that I think it should be Skinner. But that's me. That's me.
I think it will be. And it's just they don't have many good options. like that's the real tough part.
Yeah, I hear you. Just as we're in this lull, as we contemplate Skinner's fate. Thank you, Justin, for the $5 donation. Oilers are beating Canucks once in seven games and not even regulation. Does this play into the mindset that the Oilers knowing they'll need to win 3 out of 4 now? Great question, Justin. I think we don't know for sure. I think everything plays in the Oilers' mindset, and we could probably paint any narrative they want, but they do admit they got to know that they've played, they've played us 7 times this season now, and they've won one game, and it wasn't even in regulation, which is pretty, you know what side of the set you want to be on if you're a Canucks fan.
I think the moment the Oilers start thinking of that, they're done. Which I think means they won't. I think they can sort of zoom out and look at their team and be like, hey, we can beat anybody. And we should be able to beat anybody.
Yeah.
We can beat this team. And frankly, they can. They just need some saves. And they need more power plays, frankly. I mean, they got 4 last night. They went 50%. Like if they get 4 power plays, they're going to keep clicking at 30 to 50% every night. They'll get 1 or 2 goals, maybe 3, no matter what. The Canucks are just out, like the Canucks being this defensive structural team are outscoring these problems that this power play presents. So we can score 4 in a game. Yeah, we can score 5 in a game. Why not? Mm-hmm. And that I think is really valuable. This is not a Nashville Predators team where, it's defense first, right? This team can adapt to their surroundings. And I think that's what makes them a little bit special here is they've faced 2 completely polar opposite teams and found ways through both so far.
What's your prediction?
I think the Canucks are going to win the game tomorrow. They've been undefeated on the road. They've looked good. Shelovs is an absolute menace right now in net. He's been the better goalie by far. He will be better than Calvin Pickard if Calvin Pickard gets put in. He'll be better than Jack Campbell if Jack Campbell gets put in. He'll be better than any goaltender that the Oilers can bring in. Yeah. And I think that'll be enough for and if Campbell's in, call it 5-3.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the Canucks will win regardless of goalie. And I think this series is going to, I truly think this series is going to follow the same as the Nashville, that we go up 3-1. Edmonton is going to disappoint us all. I don't want this to happen. Well, we'll worry about game 5 later. And then, but man, I said Canucks in 7 at the very start of the series. And it'd be amazing if it's before that, earlier than that, I should say. But
if I were a neutral observer, I'd be cheering so hard for this thing to go 7.
Yeah.
But as a Canucks fan, if we can finish it in 5, get it out of the way. Cause this team scares me, man. They are really, really good.
Yep. We're not neutral at all.
No. Shout out Adam for 5 memberships. I love your photo of Donkey as an ogre. That's great.
Thank you, Adam. Much.
If you got a membership, make sure you say thankful or say thank you.
Yes, yes, yes.
It is midnight. Carol also with 5 memberships. Thank you very much. Great job. Thank you all for staying up so late with us. Sorry we had to go so late.
I'm hitting my prime at this time. Parker's usually in bed by now.
It is bedtime. I got I got early meetings tomorrow.
Let's give him 5 minutes. 5 minutes
for sure.
Absolutely. Amazing answers here.
All right. You get to lead though. You get to find the questions.
Okay. So please put in your questions. I know you guys have already typed them in, but it's too hard. There's like 555 people in here between X and YouTube, which we're so grateful. But let's do the questions. Type it in, retype them, copy and paste, whatever. It's just so we don't have to scroll up. But we got 5 minutes. You have our complete and undivided attention. We'll try and answer quickly. So we will try and get through as
lightning round.
Exactly. Questions as we can. So please put them in the chat starting right now. How confident are you from 1 to 10 that Vancouver will win the series? I'm going 7. I'm more than 5, but I'm not. It's not a slam dunk.
Yeah, I'm a 6.5.
Okay, very good. So we're both there. The guy cussing Zadorov at the box, or that kid on Scott Road, who is more disgraceful? Both of them. Did you see that? I did.
I think the people making a big deal of it are. I think there's dumb fans in every fan base.
Yeah, that I think that's totally fair. That's totally fair. Why is Draisaitl in such a bad mood all the time? Never really hated him or saw him more as a villain. I've tracked his career, Justin, and he infamously gets in a fight with Edmonton media all the time.
Yeah, that's the classic Spectre quote, right? Yes. Why are you so pissy, Leon? it's hilarious. I am as anti Mark Spectre as it gets, frankly, because he made his, you know, a bunch of bad faith tweets and bad takes, but that was one he was right on.
You know, Parker, how we're used to Drance and Batch and Farhan and Patrick Johnson, E. McIntyre. You know how we're used to Kuzma. They're kind of a rhythm.
They have a rapport,
right?
With the players.
Yeah, and their rhythm of reporting. So it's interesting watching the Edmonton scrums now three times in a row, and their reporters, they're even more biting in the way that they ask their questions. I'd be mad if I was Draisaitl too.
Yeah, that's fair. That is fair.
There's no way Kelly Sutherland refs us again tomorrow, is there?
I doubt it. I don't know. We usually don't find out till day of.
Right.
Like Scouting the Refs puts out their article once a day.
Yeah.
Nothing. Kelly Sutherland reffed the Stars Avalanche game tonight.
Oh, so there's no way he's reffing
tomorrow. So there's no way he's officiating tomorrow.
Sure, we're safe for one more day.
We are good.
Marcus asked, does McDavid ever get called for embellishment? Does he and will he?
It's interesting because there was that whole, you know, thing about embellishment that Rick Tocchet went on, said that the NHL sort of ref supervisor was talking about and saying, hey, you know, we're going to, you know, crack down on the embellishment. I haven't really seen it yet, frankly. Yep. There's still a lot of head snapping back. I mean, we saw Hyman's head snap back. I think it was in game two when there wasn't a stick close to his head, or it was maybe like a full 2 seconds after.
I think Lindholm sold the Draisaitl interference yesterday too.
Yep, I think that's fair. And then there was also the Pugh Suter sort of shove on McDavid behind the play in the corner where McDavid went down pretty easily. And McDavid, like I tweeted this yesterday, I was like, how does the best skater of all time go down so easily so often?
That's true.
Like I'm not saying he's diving, but like I don't get it. Like I don't get how you can be the best skater ever and every time you get a bump you end up going down.
Sticking over McDavid, over or under 2.5 points tomorrow?
Well, I think the Oilers are going to score 3 goals, so I think 2.5 is a pretty good line. I'll take the under.
Okay, the fact that Carlson and Amon got in, I'm not sure. I want to get your hopes up
tomorrow.
Yeah. And even later down the road, RP, I think we got to go pretty deep before we see Podkolzin, only because he didn't show, like, we all like him, but he didn't show much during the regular season. He wasn't bad, but he wasn't great.
And I didn't like that. I didn't like Linus Karlsson coming in yesterday.
Yeah.
However, I was wrong, and I'm happy to admit it. He was
good.
On his first couple of shifts, he had a couple chances. He was really, really good out there. And I think that's pretty good scouting on the Abbotsford side to put him in.
30 minutes for Draisaitl and McDavid. Obviously it's going to add up. I say by game 5-6, you start to see it. Like these guys are tip top shape, but you can't do that every night.
The no rest days is huge for the Canucks in this case, because when you have Tyler Myers being your high minute man, Hughes is only playing 21, 22 minutes a night. Yeah. JT Miller is only playing 20 minutes a night. And yeah, you get McDavid and Draisaitl. My concern is, what if it doesn't hit them and they're sort of thinking like, hey, this isn't going to be a problem till like game 2 of round 3. And they're saying, hey, we got to push all of our chips in because we're down in the series and we're going to keep doing it. It's going to keep working. The Canucks just need to keep being hard on these guys, though. If they can be physical and punishing for 30 minutes a night on these two guys, it will hit them by game 5, game 6.
So, Parker, related to that, the question before about Carlson, 3 in a row. Carlson, Hattie, you think Hoglander gets back, and is Hogs done for the playoffs? I wouldn't say done for the playoffs.
Not for the playoffs. No, not absolutely not. The Canucks lose a game, Hoglander comes back in, I think.
Right.
If either of those guys don't have a great night. And I don't think you can expect, Linus Karlsson to go out and be electric. Where's Jonathan Lekkerimäki? Like, get him in there. That would be electric. Get him in there. Second line wing. next to Pettersson and Mikheyev, and let's see what happens.
Or how about you do this? How about you keep the top line? You go Lindholm, Petey, Lekkerimäki, and you put Bluger between Garland and Joshua. Look how stacked we are. Yeah. Chris, I think that Juulsen obviously doesn't have the reach that Soucy does, so he's not going to break up as many plays, but he's just as physical, but he also gets burned a lot. So this is going to be interesting.
It's going to have to be a very positional-focused defensive game. Because the Canucks don't have the foot speed to keep up with these guys. We saw Soucy make that one play on McDavid to catch him, and then he gets burned later. I think you have to give space, and you have to do whatever you can to keep these guys outside.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And let's end with this right here. And it kind of goes right, what are we talking about? Would you come back with Carlson and Oman, or insert Hogs and or PDG? And the complicating factor is, DiGiuseppe's thing was a personal thing, right? It wasn't performance. Yeah.
So that could be a shoe-in to get him back in. However, Canucks won game 3.
Yeah.
No changes. Guaranteed. And frankly, look, they were both decent. I think PDG can come back in for Oman at some point. But until the Canucks lose, I think Hoglander's out.
So Oman played... Who played as a center on the fourth line? It was Bluger, right? And Oman was the winger?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, but at least you have five centers now, technically, with Oman.
Yeah, and you can get aggressive on the faceoff because you can have him come in if you get waved out, et cetera, et cetera.
Wow, good show. We're in a good mood. Now we need, we're both going to the viewing party tomorrow, correct?
Correct.
Awesome. Prediction, final score, you said 4, what'd you say?
5-3.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to be that high. No, yeah, I'm saying 6-2.
Stuart Skinner's in net.
Yeah, I know. I like your 5-3.
The shots will be 40-25. Yeah. We'll find a way.
You know, there's been a 5-4, a 4-3, and a
4-3.
4-3. I'll go 4-2, my favorite score. 4-2 Canucks.
Fair enough. You got to hope if there's more than 3 penalties, though, you're wrong.
I know. Stay out of the box.
All right, folks. Thank you all very much for joining us tonight. We will be back next Monday at 10 p.m. Instead of 11.
Unless it's game 7.
Unless it's game 7.
But it won't be.
Hopefully not. If you missed any part of the show, and make sure you subscribe with notifications on, you'll get a notification if we change it. Follow us both on Twitter. We'll tweet whenever we go live. If you missed any part of the show, you can feel free to rewind here on YouTube. If you're watching on Twitter, which 300 and something of you are, come over to YouTube. Make sure you subscribe to youtube.com/CanucksAfterDark. Clay, any parting words?
Feeling good, looking good. Let's go. Let's take a commanding 3-1 lead tomorrow.
It would be huge. Hopefully we see some poor Stuart Skinner. Everyone, have a good night. We will see you next time.